Jim Gray joins us here. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Good, guys. How y'all doing?
When will you take? When will you talk to Tom for the Sunday pregame Super Bowl interview?
We did it last night.
Oh,
and then we'll do it again. Update either Saturday night or Sunday morning, should the case be needed.
All right, give us a sneak preview. What happened? How did it go last night? Do you agree with me that Brady has never been in a better place? He seems very happy these days.
Seems to be very joyous. Seems like it's a lot looser, calmer, just a more joyous experience. And we talk about that in a Super Bowl. This was the last interview that he's supposed to be doing until the game. And I found him really, really relaxed and calm. I mean, he's never too excited or,
right.
or nervous or anxious or on edge. At least he hasn't been, you know, my experience. But he seems to be in a good place.
We've heard him say that he has the answers to the tests like he knows what he's going to see before a game. Do you get that sense more than ever that he's pretty confident that he knows that there's not going to be a lot of surprises for him Sunday?
You know, it's kind of interesting. We went back and listened to the first interview that we did 17 years ago.
Did you?
Yesterday, when we before we taped the interview. And then we had him react to some of it. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. He's always been confident without being cocky. He's always been pretty self-assured without giving off the air that, you know, he's a know-it-all.
Right.
Or you know, that he's looking down. And it was pretty cool to listen to that all those years later. But, yeah, still have to execute. You can have all this in your head and have all the knowledge, and then you have to go out and be able to perform. And so, you know, got to perform now on Sunday.
There's a different Tom Brady right now, at least as we hear him. Jim, as you said, he sounds like he's doing well. He seems very happy. I felt like there were times this year where it wasn't that way. And looking back on it, I think it was the knee injury. I think that it affected him. I think it affected his mood. It affected his play. Do you think he's had an evolution this year where now he is healthy, whereas during the year maybe he was feeling it and fighting it?
There's probably both.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't executed well. I mean, you guys watch every game and every play. You know, they didn't play well a lot this year. He'd come on every Monday night and say, we're still looking to put our best game together, all four quarters. You know, we have a quarter here or a few plays there or some drives here, and then, you know, some things break down. So it didn't ever really seem like they got into that rhythm where they had that full game or full stretch of games where everything, you know, came together and, you know, there was a cohesive unit. And then, you know, Julian missed at the beginning and, you know, you don't need to go through the whole rash and Josh and so on and so forth. So it just seems like for whatever the reason and only they know why, things have come together in the last 3 weeks or a month.
How did he sound 17 years ago? Because we would play our tapes with him, but we don't save stuff like that. You know, those are lost.
Yeah.
You know,
why bother?
Because we're idiots. You know, you guys, obviously, you're much, you know.
I mean, they have everything. I mean, you can't believe some of the stuff they have going all the way back to Jack Buck days, early
we
times.
We were sitting
in
our
53 years ago when they did the first Super Bowl.
We were sitting.
They still have that archive
in the Irish pub, Meehan's, last night, watching you chase John Schuerholz around for the Dion.
Right.
You know, when Dion did that thing, and hey, there's Jim. You don't look much different, I got to tell you.
Well,
but what did
check
Brady,
your eyes out?
Brady just sound like a dumb kid back then, or what did he sound?
No,
like?
No, he didn't. He sounded, you know, like he was pretty self assured, and he was a bit in awe, and you know, I asked him the question. You know, how many times have you played this in your mind and had this thought that someday you'd be in the Superdome or the Super Bowl and play in this game? And he said, a gazillion times I've done this. And I've gone out at halftime of the Super Bowl. And I've had my friends and our neighbors and guys that I play with run to the fire hydrant and catch the post to win the touchdown over the cornerback, and he had it all detailed and spelled out. He said, and I've played out that script in my mind a gazillion times. And then we ended it, and I said, so has the reality been better or was the dream? Because this is now your ninth time doing this. And he said, you know, the reality was much, much better than the dream, but that he still has the dream, and that he still, you know, even though he's accomplished it, you know, fantasizes the wrong word, but he still
right.
plays it out in his mind. Of how to do it and even try and do it better.
Do you have a theory on why he was bailing out on some throws in the regular season? There was that, obviously, that real blatant one against Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And we talked about it, obviously. Everything Brady does, we talk about at length. And it was weird. He was like seeing ghosts and kind of fading and bailing on some throws.
You know, he probably got hit once or twice.
Right.
And it's like Mike Tyson used to tell me, used to say to the world, everybody has a plan until
they get hit
in the mouth. Okay, so, you know, I don't care if you're 41, 21, whatever age you are, Little League, Pee Wee, Pop Warner, who wants to get smacked?
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. This is my guess. I haven't discussed it with him because what you guys do is much different than what we do. We have a national audience. You guys have a much longer period of time, I think. I don't hear all of your interviews. I hear some of them, particularly when they become newsworthy. And then, you know, we have to know what's been said for the national audience. So, you know, I don't get in necessarily into specific plays unless it's the miracle in Miami.
Right.
Or something that, you know, happens at the end of the game that he's involved with.
But I think you're right. He doesn't. Self-preservation is perhaps his greatest strength. I mean, he doesn't get hit. He doesn't get hurt. He's 41, and he says he feels better than ever. So in his mind, part of his brilliance is avoiding the big hit. You know, and we see other quarterbacks every week take those hits. Hell, his understudy, Jimmy Garoppolo, said, I'm going to show everyone how tough I am. Cut back on the field, gut crushed. He's gone for the year, and, you know, maybe he'll never be the same. Who knows? But Brady makes it a point to, above all else, avoid the big hit, even if he looks, you know, like he's ducking and hiding sometimes.
You know, I have noticed in the past couple of years, he just bails out on plays when he sees it's not there.
Right.
He'll throw it in the ground or he'll throw it away. And, you know, he knows that either who he's throwing it to is going to get clobbered or he might be in peril.
Right.
Or that it's just not going to be successful. So he just, you know, I have noticed that. But that's smart. I mean, that's smart. They keep that statistic too. How many passes are intentionally incomplete?
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, think of it. If you're Belichick or you're Kraft, aren't you glad that he sometimes does that?
It's smart. Right. It's knowing what to do and when to do it.
If he was hurt during the year and he's trying to protect that, knowing it's going to heal, then
we wouldn't be here if he took a hit, you know, that day.
That's definitely true. So you may not talking about every play, Jim, but you're with him a lot. Like last offseason, you're with him up at the college thing that went viral, talking about the coach. You've been with him.
The college.
Was it Salem
it
State?
It was a couple years ago.
Two years ago, I'm sorry.
You're talking about Milken Institute.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Oh, right. It was the Milken Institute, which is pretty, that's the famous, you know, no comment.
Yes, and there's been last
offseason. Do you know how much time we spent
different.
Talking
that's
about?
That's what I mean. This year's so different.
You get a no comment out of him, and we spent a month talking about it.
That was plead the fifth, I think.
I'm sorry. Yeah, plead the fifth.
I don't remember the no comment.
That's what
I plead the fifth. We probably played it 100 times and you asked him about it. And so last offseason specifically, he was seemed like a different guy. This year, you mentioned Joe. What's different? What do you think is different with Tom this year than last year?
Well, I think, first of all, it's so hard to lose a Super Bowl. I don't care who you are, whether you've won five or that's your only chance. Chuck Daly was my best friend, my mentor, and he introduced me to my wife. Chuck Daly won two world championships with the Detroit Pistons. Went, you know, was a great coach in the Final Four in his college days. Was the original Dream Team coach. And he never got over the fact that Isaiah Thomas threw the ball away in Boston Garden, and they lost that game. He died being more upset about that than joyous about what had occurred later on in his life.
Really?
And I think that these things haunt, and maybe they don't discuss it, and maybe they only discuss it with those who they're most intimate with. I have not had this conversation with Tom, so I'm not trying to extract how Chuck felt to Tom. But I do believe that I have asked him this question before. Do you think more about losing to David Tyree and Mario Manningham, or more about Malcolm Butler and what happened against the Falcons in your first three? And he said, well, I think about them all. I think about them all. But I think having come off to answer your question now, the season, losing a Super Bowl is hard. Having that strip sack is tough. Being 40 years of age at the time, coming under 41, you never know if you're going to have another chance. And do you want that to live in your head for however long it's going to live? Perhaps a week, a month, a year, a lifetime? We don't know. It's not our heads. So I just think that now you get into the season, whatever acrimony there was last season, whatever was going on, you know, is behind him. You got to be ready for what's next. You can't always be in the rearview mirror. And I think they've all just put it behind them, whatever it was, and everybody's in a good space, and you haven't had any of the drama and stuff that went on. And perhaps the performance of the team wasn't as good.
Right.
But there was a calmer atmosphere for whatever the reason. Maybe Bill has made it calmer. You know, the thing with Alex has not been an issue.
True.
It's settled down. You know, there's been all sorts of things. You know, Julian came back. So, you know, it's just been seeming to me, from a distance, to be a much calmer sea.
Jim, he has never missed a chance to sing the praises of Gronk or express his love for his teammate. Do you think that is because he knows that this might be Gronk's last game?
I think here's a guy who has genuine appreciation for all of those around him who have helped and who have been a part of all of this, and he doesn't feel that it's all about him. And Gronk has been a huge, huge part, like a lot of these other guys, and he's been a special guy, and I think he loves his company, and he loves being around him. He makes it fun. He makes it loose. He's entertaining. I'm sure he entertains the guys, you know, in the locker room. And, you know, he's a character, and you know, he's probably appreciative, and he sees the end coming, either for himself or for Gronk. You know, how long can all of this go on? I asked George Steinbrenner that when I handed him the trophy. And I said, George, this is whatever championship it was. How long can this go on? And he started to grind. He said, forever.
Really?
But it can't. It does come to an end. So perhaps Tom feels that. Perhaps Gronk feels that. Might not be this year. Might be next year. Might be after this game. You know, I don't think that anybody knows, you know. And when you don't know and you keep being asked the same thing, you know, it's kind of hard to come up with an answer for something you don't even know internally.
I know. I don't think we'll ever accuse Brady of taking it for granted. You know, he never misses the chance to tell you that, he appreciates every second, including this year, more than ever, I think, this year.
Because it's so hard. The one thing he's drilled into my head the past decade, it's hard to win a game in the NFL. It may look like Tampa Bay on the schedule. It may look like Cincinnati or somebody who's down for the moment.
Right.
But it's not easy. They're paying those guys, too. Fran Tarkenton very famously said, you know, they pay the guys on defense as well. So, you know, it's just kind of hard to win all these games. And we think, here's the schedule, here's the wins. And the fans, we only really see, or the media even, you know, the final result. And we examine the final result. All the detail and all the hard work and all the dedication.
Well, I was thinking that when we see Matt Ryan, he's here, he's walking around. Matt Ryan's an MVP, great player, you know, $100 million contract. And you mentioned how devastating it is to lose a Super Bowl. I don't think he's ever going back. He went to one Super Bowl, lost it. That guy's got it all going on. Brady's been to 9, won 5. And there's this huge, you know, gulf between these two great players. And it just, you look at Matt Ryan, you say, he can't come close to Tom Brady. He's great. He's an MVP. But, I mean, one Super Bowl, and he lost, and that's it.
You have to have other things in your life for it not to devastate you. Alex Spanos was a dear friend of mine. He was great to me as a young man. I was one of the people that gave the eulogy at his funeral this year. And he went to one Super Bowl, and they lost.
Right.
Okay, the 49ers. And
Chargers.
The Chargers, yeah, when they were in San Diego. And they lost that Super Bowl, and his life was about love. Loved his family, loved his community, loved his business, loved his team. But love was first. Al Davis, winning was first. So winning was omni-important to Al. But Al told Alex Spanos, for your life and for what you're trying to accomplish, you're a much greater champion than I am. Because you have what it is internally you want, and that's the love of your family, your team, your community, your country, and all the things that were important to him as a World War II man. So for Matt Ryan, he may never get over this because I'm sure that football dominates his life. So if he doesn't get another chance, you hope that he can move into something later on where it just doesn't always look back and haunt him. And passage of time makes everything better. It always does, doesn't it?
I don't know, 28-3 has a certain indelible, you know, mark.
Run the ball 3 times and win that game is going to stick a while for that team, Jim. It feels like we talked to so many of them this year. These people that were are wishing, you hear them nationally, they're wishing for the downfall of Tom Brady. The cliff, you know, Max Kellerman and the cliff. I believe he is fueled by that. I believe when we talk to him, I get the sense that he wants to prove people wrong. Do you get that sense with him, and I think it's rejuvenated this year because the age, you talked about the age all the time. People bring up his age. I think he's trying to prove those people wrong every single time he takes the field.
I think that chip has never left from being drafted 199, and I think that things of this nature, not necessarily Max Kellerman, because Tom will tell you he's not at home watching this stuff. You know, he may hear about it. It's brought to his attention.
Yeah, we tell him. We tell him.
But I mean, it's not like he's seeking it out. And I have another friend who always tells me, don't worry about your enemies bringing you bad news. Your friends will do just fine. So, I mean, everybody makes him aware of it, so he is aware of it. And I think it all contributes. You know, what was Julian hollering at him last week? You're too old.
Yeah.
And a couple weeks ago, he said to Tracy Wolfson, everybody thinks we suck. So he does hear this. Even if he's not Googling himself and even if he's not listening to the radio or participating in that aspect of it. I think he has a major chip on his shoulder, and that's probably a lot of the joy that has come here is because nobody expected this. And everybody said, this is it. And, you know, as far as Max is concerned, Max has kind of just been doing this on television since he took this rollover from Skip Bayless.
Right.
And he picked this as an issue.
Yep.
And he's been wrong on this issue. And I have tremendous respect for Max. Known him a long time. He's a boxing expert, and he's a very, very smart guy. But it's more of a reflection on him at this point, this assessment,
right?
Than it is of Tom. I mean, of course, at some point, every athlete will be diminished. So at some point, he will be right. But he's like 3 or 4 years ahead of this thing, 2 years.
Right.
And it just becomes insane now for a guy who's played in 3 straight Super Bowls to say, he's done, because what's the indication that you have in front of you that leads you to that assessment?
Now, we talked about...
Now, it attracts viewers, so I guess that's success.
But even Shannon Sharpe threw up his hands the other day and said, I give up, you know? Kellerman's sticking to his guns, and you're right. Someday, he's going to be right, and he's going to say, see, there's the cliff. But before he lets you go, we talk to Brady every week. I've been doing it for years, as long as you have. But I don't get to hang with him. You hang with him. You, when you and Stedman are hanging, and Brady... What's it like? Is it a lot of laughs, or just do you guys sit around and exchange deep thoughts? Because Brady's into this, you know, philosophy of everything now. He's very deep.
Deep thoughts. I mean, we play golf.
What's that like?
Stedman's a brilliant man. Stedman has written 15 books. Stedman teaches identity. Okay?
See, I don't even grasp that. You guys are much deeper. I don't even know what that means.
Do you know who you are?
I think so.
Well, you're probably not sure.
Right, I'm not sure.
And whatever you are, you're probably in some box as a talk show host, as a Boston guy, as whatever it is that people would assign you that don't know you. Okay?
Right.
So do you then assign that to yourself, or are you yourself? Do you then become what it is that everybody thinks you are?
I told you this is what they do.
No.
But do you do this on the golf course?
Wait a second. But you don't live in the same bubble, and you don't live the same existence that Stedman has had to live being with Oprah Winfrey for 35 years, okay? No person could, and these are Oprah's words, go through this with the dignity, grace, and manner and intelligence that he has. The guy's portrayed as a Martian in front of every tabloid all the time.
Is he?
You know, everything that could possibly be said has been said about this guy. So think about how Tom and Giselle have to live. You know, we see the existence differently because we don't live it.
Right.
When you live it and you go outside and you see how people are following him, cameras out all the time, everything's being recorded, every misstep is being judged on or off the field, in her life, on or off the runway, the kids, whatever it is. You know, it's a different existence. So, you know, you better be prepared how to handle that. Because how many have we seen who can't handle it?
Right.
So, you know, when people make fun of that or diminish it, it's like Max Kellerman. It's like, think about it for a second. And think about what it's doing for the guy who's receiving it. I'm not admonishing you or anybody. I'm just saying, when people start writing that stuff and saying that stuff, what's their thought process? What's the easy line that gets them off? And to those folks, they don't even notice it because it's in the gazillions of things that's said or written. But it may be helpful to the people who are involved. And if it helps them and the relationship is mutually beneficial,
well,
then why not? Why should that be ridiculed?
I would say this, and you know it better than anyone. If the worst you can say is that he's a weird diet, you know, or he posts weird memes, he's doing pretty well. He's been in the spotlight for 20 years, and there's no arrests, you know, there's no drunk drivings. There's not even any teammate. There's no teammate who doesn't like him. I mean, and there's been 1,000 of them. So if
there's the guy who really is trying to be better tomorrow than he was yesterday in all aspects of his life, whether it's football, his personal life, his relationships, whatever it is that he's doing, the brain exercises, TB12, whatever it is, he's trying to be a better self. And he's trying to take a step forward instead of relying on the rearview mirror or always, you know, saying I did this instead of what I can't accomplish. So, you know, everybody has a thought, and really everybody, you know, entitled to their opinion, and that's all well and good and fine. But I'm just saying, if you look at it, that's how I would assess it. He's trying to move forward.
All right, Scratchy, where does that come from? Is it because you're a scratch golfer?
I wish that was the case.
No.
I wish that was the case. No, Jack Nicholson has called me Scratchy for years. I played golf with Jack all the time, and he would call me Scratchy, so everybody thought it was because I was a good golfer, but that wasn't the case. He used to watch... Back in the 80s, he would watch the Laker games. You know, he watches all the Laker games, but he would call, and he'd say, got a little scratchy with those people tonight. Keep digging for the story there, Scratch. Getting scratchy. I'm always for the performer, you know. But keep digging. Just keep scratching. So he'd call me Scratchy so everybody would hear this.
Uh-huh.
And Jack did some interviews with me on television. He doesn't do interviews on television, but he did 4 or 5 with me. Back on the NBA on NBC and CBS and then ESPN, and he'd call me Scratchy, so if everybody called me Scratchy, and they had no idea why, but that's the reason why.
And that's the reason why a part of the conversation on, it'll be Tom Brady pregame, and then you can't do a halftime. He's playing in the game, can't do that, so just pregame.
Postgame as well.
Oh, excellent. Okay. There you go. So pre and post with Jim Gray and Tom Brady on Westwood One. Jim, we appreciate you taking a few minutes, man. Thank you
guys,
so much.
Guys, good to talk to
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Scratchy.
Keep it up. Thanks for the. It's all right. It's fine. I'm used to it.
We'll be listening Sunday.
I'll be listening to you Monday morning.
Yep.
Excellent. Even though I won't have a show on Monday night, but I'll listen anyway because I'll be interested to see how things go.
We will talk to him on Monday morning. Jim will talk
to
him
talk
Sunday.
Good to talk to you
guys. Good to talk to you
years.
Too, Jim.
Thanks for having me.
Westwood One has it in the pregame with Tom Brady. We have that and the game Sunday right here on WEEI.